Welcome to another episode of Plugged Into Safety, the podcast that answers real-world questions about electrical safety in the workplace and helps listeners plug into their very own outlet for knowledge and expertise. Now let's join eHazard's own Brian McCauley and Derek Vigstel as they explore the answers that keep us plugged into safety.
Thank you for tuning in to Plugged Into Safety. This episode, Derek and I will be covering the pre-use inspection for personal protective equipment. Just a quick reminder, if you have not already, hit the subscribe button so you are able to get the latest information on all Plugged Into Safety content. Derek, before we get started, you're always traveling. You always have a million things on your plate. Where do we find you today?
You find me hanging out in my own personal safe space, my bedroom. I've got my little office set up here in the corner of my bedroom, and that's the corner of the house I've been delegated to, and so I am home, and I've been home for a couple of weeks. It's been nice, been able to watch my son do his thing on the wrestling mat here for senior year of high school. We just actually got his first college acceptance letter.
Congratulations.
Of course, it's 2022 now, so it's not a college acceptance letter. It was a college acceptance text message. He got a text message saying congratulations from his admissions counselor at the University of Indianapolis. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. I'm excited to be able to be home and be watching him as he embarks on this journey of what the next stage in life is. That's the cool part about being a parent, right? Is we get to see our kids grow up and what's going to be the next part of their life. It's been awesome. So I'm just really happy to be home. But February's right around the corner here, and it's going to get me back out on the road a little bit. But we got a couple trips planned here, and I think my wife's going to accompany me on one to Nashville Hill here coming up. So it should be a good month. Yeah.
Good. Nashville's a great place. Hopefully you guys catch some live music, see some entertainment down in that little area. I forget the name of the street that everything's on there, but downtown there, really nice, nice place.
Well, don't tell me, because I like to leave the hotel room and just kind of wander around in these new places and find what I find. And, you know, it's part of having a good experience in a new place, right? Just go see what life has in store for you.
I'm with you on that one. All right, cool. Well, why don't we get started here? This is a great topic. I'm really excited about it today. We both have a lot of history in this one when it comes to personal protective equipment. We probably both have stories we can share. But at the end of the day, it's really important that our customers know this pre-use visual inspection or inspection, whatever it might be, for personal protective equipment. But there's so much more to personal protective equipment, right?
Yeah. So, the way I talk about it when I'm in front of a classroom, when I'm teaching a safety class, it's really about that whole conversation is really about the idea of risk reduction, right? When we look at the definition of qualified person, as we've covered in other episodes, exactly what a qualified person is, it's that two-part definition, right? Demonstrated the skills and knowledge, that fun stuff, but then has received safety training to identify the hazards and reduce the associated risk. Reducing the associated risk is really what we're after. Now, we can do that either by reducing the possibility of injury or the likelihood of occurrence of injury, or we can do that by reducing the severity of injury should it happen. And that's really what PPE is aimed at doing, right? Which is why it's the last rung on the ladder in the hierarchy of risk controls, because it doesn't do anything to prevent the event from happening, but simply looks to reduce the severity of how bad the results are when the thing happens. But it only does that if we use it, first off. I mean, that's a big thing, right? We have to use it. But if we use it, we have to use it correctly. We have to take care of it correctly. We have to maintain it correctly. And then really important piece here, before we put it on and put our life on the line with that PPE, we need to make sure that it's in good working condition. And that's really what that pre-use inspection is all about, right? doing that inspection before we depend on our personal protective equipment to be that life-saving measure, to be able to rest assured that it will reduce the severity of our injury to a survivable level.
Love it. I think you're right on track with that. And there's so much more to this PPE. I mean, if you think about it, you've got Arc Flash clothing. I get questions all the time about how to care and use for that, how to visual inspect that prior to, you know, donning it. You've got insulated rubber gloves, leather protectors, face shields, balaclavas. I mean, you can go down the list. There's just so much that people need to make sure they're aware of, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things I like to do every time I go out to a facility is, you know, let's take a look at the worker's ability to inspect their PPE, because, you know, I stress in every class I teach that we're going to try and find a different way to mitigate the risk to the employee other than PPE first. So we're going to go through that process of, you know, asking the questions: can I establish the electrically safe work condition? If I can't, can I stay away from the hazard? If I can't stay away from the hazard, then can I put something between me and the hazard? If I can't put something between me and the hazard, my last option may be that I have to wear personal protective equipment. So let's take a look at how the workers in that facility, how they approach doing that inspection for the integrity of their PPE. And, you know, a big one is rubber insulating gloves. Doing that air inflation test at the beginning, you know, 70E says that we have to do that inflation test before first use each day, which, you know, that's what the standard says. But, you know, in reality, you know, if we're using this equipment on a regular basis, we should be checking it a little more often than once in the beginning of the morning, because we could have done damage to it, you know, the third or fourth time we use them during the day. And that air inflation test is a key component of ensuring that our rubber gloves are going to do their job. And rubber gloves are oftentimes, if we're using rubber gloves for shock protection, they're the only thing that's in between us and getting dead from the shock hazard. And, you know, I think what we miss a lot, because a lot of attention gets put on Arc Flash and a lot of time and energy and effort gets put into, well, how do we determine Arc Flash PPE and what level of PPE do we need to wear and all that fun stuff. But shock is the big killer. Shock accounts for almost 98% of fatalities in the workplace, as opposed to Arc Flash. So, you know, the by the time we get our rubber gloves on, that's really we're just on the other side of a thin piece of rubber from us being, you know, laying in a puddle on the floor because we made contact with the energized parts and there's enough power there to kill us, right? Yeah. It doesn't take a lot. So ensuring that those gloves are in good working condition is, I mean, it's paramount to our survival if we're doing this type of work.
Yeah, you know? And I'll share with you this too. I mean, I back from the Salisbury days, I was there, as you know, 16 plus years, 17 years. And it's interesting when you look at insulated rubber gloves, those are manufactured so that someone can actually make contact with a hazard, which in this case is electricity. But every other PPE out there is something that you wear just in case something happens or just in case an event happens. It doesn't have to be electrical safety. It could be fall protection if you fall, head protection if, you know, you come into contact with something with your head, or hearing protection if you reach a certain decibel level. But in this case, those gloves are made for contact, right? So you're actually going out, you're grabbing a hazard potentially. So it's extremely important to make sure you follow those steps on the visual inspection. And then not to mention following the rules of ASTM, where we need to make sure we get them tested every 6 months.
Yeah, well, and then that's a whole nother can of worms right there, talking about the dielectric testing and really what we're doing with that dielectric test, that every 6 months test for gloves, or every that annual test for things like dielectric shoes and insulating blankets. But that dielectric test is really, we're recertifying that piece of protective equipment is still in good working condition, and it's still meeting the parameters that the ASTM standard put in place for You know, what levels it needs to meet to get certified as being a certain type of insulation, right? And I'm not exactly, I'm not an expert by any means in what the ASTM standards require. And I can't, that stuff I can't rattle off the top of my head, which I'm okay with. I know the number I want to go look at, right? For gloves, if I had to go look it up, I would look at ASTM D120 and I'll go find that. You know, that's knowing exactly what the test method is a little bit kind of nice to know, but it's not necessary really. But I just need to know really that I need to do it every 6 months for my gloves. I need 100%. To recertify those every 6 months. And then I need to test them before I use them. I need to do that visual inspection. I want to make sure I'm looking for things like pinholes and cracks and any sort of maybe signs that the rubber itself is starting to break down. I like to stretch the fingers out a little bit to see if there's any sort of discoloration in the rubber between the fingers or on the fingertips or anything like that, that would give me reason to believe that the rubber is no longer in its original shape. Right. And then that would give me cause to say, okay, hey, look, you know what? I'm not 100% certain that my gloves are going to protect me. Cause like you said, I'm going to actually physically make contact with energized parts. And if I make physical contact with energized parts and my gloves aren't in the condition that they're supposed to be in order to protect me, well, that's in my book, that would be a really bad day. That would be a really bad day, and I might not get another one to improve upon it. Especially if they've been torn or punctured or something like that, that could be the end of things. Especially with some of the voltage that our customers and clients work with. I mean, I was just teaching a class yesterday talking about how they're doing energized work with 34,500 volt systems, right? So if we're working around 34K, I'm going to make sure I do everything possible to ensure my gloves are in tip top shape. If not, I'm not going anywhere near that conductor, anywhere near that equipment in a way that could get me hurt.
You got that right. I remember back in the day with the Salisbury gloves, they have these class 4 gloves that are designed for that 34.5. And boy, you got linemen out there working live on it and grabbing the lines. And boy, I'll tell you, I'm from the manufacturer, and I don't know that I would feel comfortable putting those gloves on and working in those conditions. I mean, those guys are truly heroes, but they've been doing it for years and they know what to look for. But to your point, that visual inspection, just to make sure that product is working and effective in the field, so important.
Well, and I'm an inside guy, right? So I'm an inside wireman, and we like to turn the power off. Of course, it hasn't always been that way, but we like to turn the power off to stay safe. The lineman guys, they are definitely a different breed, and I have a huge amount of respect for guys that go out and do that type of work, because I think about my own personal skills, and I at one point in my career, I almost thought when work was really slow in the Minneapolis area, I really thought about, well, maybe I should go over and take my stab at doing some line work and see what happens. But I just could never bring myself to do it because I know that meant coming in contact with energized conductors that are well outside of my comfort zone. That's for sure.
It is definitely intimidating. So let's switch gears just a little bit here. We spent some time on rubber gloves or insulated rubber gloves. I know that's really, really important. Another topic that I get a lot of questions on from our customers is just straight up the arc flash clothing. And they'll ask questions along the lines of what inspection procedures would you suggest before I don the equipment or before I have my team don the equipment. And I always answer, and help me out, Derek, if I'm on the right track, just look through the garments, making sure there's no holes, making sure there's no abrasions, making sure there's no wear to the equipment. If you see any of that, you need to make sure you replace it immediately. But as long as you're not seeing that, the garments should be perfectly fine.
Yeah. So with arc flash, you got to remember the PPE is essentially acting as though it's a shield, right? It's a shield that's going to protect you from the heat and it's going to keep the fire out. Because half the battle in surviving an arc flash injuries or surviving an arc flash incident, half the battle is the trying not to stay on fire. So most of the serious injuries that occur due to arc flash are because the individual, their clothing caught on fire during the event, and then they sustained significant burns over their body because, you know, they're they're on fire. And that's, you know, I always hear a good friend of mine who was on the 70E committee would always say, you know, the fact is that people aren't getting killed from arc flash because they're not wearing enough PPE. People are getting killed from arc flash because they're not wearing any PPE at all. And so that's that. And I agree with them on that because, you know, they're getting in those events and their clothing's catching on fire. Their you know, polyester shirts are melting to them. I mean, there's just a whole bunch of nasty stuff going on. So when we're not wearing PPE, so we got to remember that that arc flash PPE is like our sort of shield that stands between us and getting injured from the arc flash. So what we're looking for is any sort of indication that it's either going to not do its job in keeping the heat out and keeping the flame out, or that PPE is going to not do its function of not staying on fire. So we're looking for things like tears and rips and holes and worn fabric. We're looking for things like contamination, maybe with some oil or some sort of solvent or something like that that could potentially be flammable. And you know, we do a lot of classes for individuals who are in the sort of field of what we have deemed multi-craft maintenance techs, right? So they'll be doing electrical work, but then the next work order they get is to go change the oil on the forklift. Or, you know, I was just in a tire manufacturing facility not too long ago where they're dealing with a lot of rubber cement. And, you know, this particular substance that they have within their facility is so flammable that it warrants a special fire protection system within the building because of how flammable it is. And almost every one of the multi-craft maintenance techs in that facility had this chemical embedded into their arc-rated PPE.
Wow.
So you got to question that at that point, like how well is that arc-rated shirt going to do its job?
Yeah.
How well is the, you know, if you're not, if especially when you put this arc-rated PPE for daily wear on, you know, and they're using it as their daily wear uniform, you know, you just open it up to them contaminants that much more. So we have to be super diligent. If that's the type of work we're in, we have to be that much more diligent and pay attention to details and do those inspections so that we're going to catch the possibility that our arc flash PPE, yeah, it may keep the flame at bay and it may keep the arc flash at bay. But if it catches on fire, well, what good was that then? Right.
Exactly.
So we need to inspect this stuff, and we should be inspecting our arc flash PPE before every single time we need it to function as arc flash PPE. Right.
I agree with that.
So to back up a little bit, we can separate it from the arc flash PPE is beneficial for us in two ways, right? There's the times where we're doing stuff that we know is potentially going to cause an arc flash. And then there's times where we're doing stuff on the job site where if an arc flash happened, at least we're wearing something that's going to protect us, right? And so we need to separate it. And I would say, you know, from a daily uniform standpoint, it's great because if I'm walking into a situation where I'm just operating an isolation device or a circuit breaker or something like that, I'm just flipping the handle on it. There's no indication that would give me a reason to believe it's going to blow up, but again, I don't have a crystal ball that I can see inside that equipment with. So, you know, that whole idea of evidence of impending failure from the normal operation in 70E, it's not a perfect science that I can tell that. So, you know, having daily uniforms that are arc rated are beneficial because sometimes stuff just happens.
Yeah.
Okay. But then on the flip side, when I'm actually physically doing something, and I talk about this in my classes all the time, is like, if you're going to expose energized conductors and you're going to physically make contact with them and do stuff with it, you have an arc flash hazard. So when I'm doing that type of work, I need to make sure that I'm doing a thorough inspection of the PPE that I'm going to count to reduce the severity of my injuries if there's an arc flash. And keep in mind that reducing the severity of my injuries just gets me to a survivable level. And now I don't know about you, Brian, but I'm not a gambling man. So I'd like to have a little bit more reassurance than it should reduce my injuries to a survivable level. So I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure that my PPE is going to be as effective as possible. And that includes doing that pre-use inspection before every time I put myself in that position.
Yeah, well said. And one thing I wanted to go back to, because you had a really good point earlier on, and I don't know if this would apply to rubber cement, but there's a lot of facilities and factories where you're just going to get dirty and your clothes are going to get dirty. And a question I get a lot is, you know, can we wash our ArcFlash PPE at home? And the answer I always give is pretty much the same, because most of these manufacturers agree that, you know, you can wash at home, just avoid bleach, avoid fabric softener, because it has a tendency to stay with the garments. And wash it by itself, you know, keep it away from other fabrics. And as long as that's being done and it's a mild detergent, that type of thing, it's perfectly fine to be able to wash, you know, these clothes at home, this ArcFlash PPE at home. But and some people can wash it in their manufacturing plants as well. Just it is a good thing, though, to keep those contaminants out of the clothing for sure.
Yeah. And you know, obviously with your background coming from the PPE manufacturing sector there, you have a lot more insight into that than a lot of folks, but yeah, I would say we definitely need to, if we're going to ask our employees to take care of their ArcFlash PPE on their own time and in their own at home, we need to make sure we're schooling them on exactly how that's supposed to be done. You know, I've done a number of audits over the last few months where, when I've talking to the individuals within the facility, it's like, well, I only have one shirt. So yeah, I take it home and do it myself, even though the company has a service that they use for taking care of these uniforms, which there's been some concerns with on that side as well, like how the repairs are being made. Are they really being laundered how they're supposed to? Because, you know, we take them off and there's only one dirty clothes bin in the whole facility. So the electricians throw their dirty clothes in with the millwrights. And so now are they laying in that dirty bin? Are they getting contaminated with oil and grease and all that stuff? And then do they get washed appropriately? Right. So, and I forget who was talking to me about that. I think it may have been Hugh. I had Hugh Hoagland on a phone call. I was asking questions about this because I was on an audit at the time and they were asking about it. And he said, you know what you can do? If you have questions about it, take a garment that's maybe damaged beyond repair or something like that and send it into the clothing manufacturer and have them retest it. Have them, because, you know, obviously ArcFlash PPE is a little bit different than rubber insulating gloves. We don't send it back in every 6 months to get recertified as being ArcRated PPE. Because that test is destructive, right? So, but we could take a garment that's been damaged or we suspect it's been contaminated beyond repair and send it back to the manufacturer and say, hey, can you test it? Can you run it through the ASTM 1506 test again and make sure that the service that is doing our taking care of our ArcRated garments is actually doing it appropriately, right? So, but that's all good stuff. I mean, we catch this stuff in the inspection. If we aren't doing that pre-use inspection, we're not going to see it. And, you know, that's the last thing we want to do. I think we got a slide in our training program that shows what happens with an ArcRated shirt that's contaminated with some hydraulic oil. You know, and it's side by side with one that isn't. The one that isn't handles, it performs really well. The one with the hydraulic oil on it starts on fire and keeps burning because it's covered in oil.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know any industrial electrician that by 9:30 a.m. before he takes first coffee break in the morning, I don't know any industrial guy working with Rigid that doesn't have a bunch of cutting oil splattered on the front of his shirt. Right. So yeah,
100%.
It's 100% a possibility. So we need to be cognizant of that and do our inspections.
I agree with you. And one other thing I figured I'd share with our listeners is there are some helpful things out there that some manufacturers have come up with. So there are some low voltage rubber insulating gloves that actually have two layers. I've seen some yellow black mixes. I've seen some red and blues, but that helps with the visual inspection you mentioned earlier, Derek, as you're going through, you're pulling through the rubber, pulling through the fingers to make sure there's no holes. If you ever see that bottom layer coming through the top layer, for instance, if the glove is black and you see a yellow layer coming through, you know, you've got a bad glove. And insulated tools, I've seen a lot of insulated tools out there. They're rated to 1,000 volts, right? But they're dipped with two different layers. Sometimes there's a yellow layer underneath an orange layer. Some of the manufacturers do it that way. So if the glove or if the tool gets nicked, you see that yellow layer coming through the orange, you know, you got a bad tool, you need to replace that tool. So there are some helpful things out there that can help help the folks out in the field to kind of be a little bit more aware of whether or not they have good, you know, ready to go PPE or not. Right.
Right. Well, and I was always a fan of that double color insulation on the tools because, you know, I'll let you in on a little secret, Brian. I'm lazy.
I don't think so. I'm going to disagree with that one.
I'm lazy from the standpoint is I want my pre PPE inspection to go as quick as possible so I can hurry up and get the work done. Right. But I loved it just because it made it easy for me. Yeah. It made it easy for me because if there was any damage, I saw the different color and all right, hey, it's time to remove that tool from service and get something else. So, I didn't know there were rubber insulating gloves that had that same method of double colors to it. You know, I don't necessarily see myself going back into the field at this point. I'm having too much fun teaching classes and doing consulting work, but you know, I can't ever rule anything out. I mean, that's why I keep renewing my electrical license. You never know. One day I might strap the tools back on and go back to work, but
there you go.
But yeah, I would definitely, if I was in the field today, I would definitely be interested in checking those products out because again, like you said, it makes it easier for you and it just keep it simple. If we can keep it simple, we can keep it easy.
And like you said, from the very beginning, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, there's so many things that we need to be doing prior to even getting to the PPE standpoint. I think you said this is the last rung in the ladder. I've always said it's your last resort. I mean, hopefully our listeners are getting the idea that this is really just the last, you know, step in the whole protection process. There's so many things that need to happen before this, but let's just make sure that we are doing those visual inspections and making sure that what we're taking in the field is working.
Well, and I would love if one of the listeners would send us a note. Maybe one of those other things that we talked about is what you got to do before we get to PPE. I'd love if they write in and let us know. They want to hear more about that stuff. Because you know, it's a whole lot more effective to protect us from electrical hazards by shutting the power off and establishing an electrically safe work condition than it is to put our rubber insulating gloves or arc flash PPE on or any of that other stuff. Let's try and shut the power off and establish that electrically safe work condition, every single time we can, unless we absolutely can't. Right. Yeah. And, but that we could fill a whole extra time slot on that topic alone, sir. We could probably do a whole series of podcasts on establishing an electrically safe work condition.
That is so important. All right. Well, I think today's podcast, Plugged Into Safety, has been awesome. Love the topic. Any final comments, Derek, before we kind of close it out for our listeners at home?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate exactly what kind of how we opened it up, right? PPE is important and we need to use it when we need to use it. However, the priority of electrical safety is that electrically safe work condition. So establish an electrically safe work condition unless you can't. And when you can't, there are instances where we are unable to de-energize, lock it out, and verify absence of voltage. So in those instances, when we can't, let's either try and stay away from it, put something else between us and the hazard, or if we can't do any of those other things, then we're gonna resort to PPE, and we need to make sure we're using it correctly. You need to make sure we're inspecting it correctly, and we need to make sure we're wearing all of it that we need to have in those instances.
Yeah, well said, Derek. Well, hey, we want to thank everyone for tuning in to this week's Plugged Into Safety podcast. Please be sure to hit that subscribe button to catch future episodes on electrical safety. And remember, as Derek mentioned before, if you have questions, ideas for future Plugged Into Safety podcasts, please email us at podcasts@ehazard.com. That's podcasts@ehazard.com. Thank you again for all joining us today on this podcast, and we'll look forward to having you for the next Plugged Into Safety.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of eHazard's Plugged Into Safety with Brian and Derek. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button and give us a review to let us know how we are doing. Also, let us know what you want to hear about in the comments or send your requests to podcasts@e-hazard.com. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to having you join us for future episodes where eHazard keeps you plugged into safety.